Welcome to the Rich Room Podcast.
I'm your host, Lindsay Sobel.
Where you can master the art of enriching your life.
What kind of kindergarten shit is this?
And finding a path to financial freedom.
Who the fuck was supposed to teach me how to do my taxes?
So sit back, relax, and step into the Rich Room. You know I can't help but these, cause they know they can never touch these. So baby, let me talk my shit, or I might just throw another fit.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Rich Room Podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay Sobel. How the fuck are y'all doing today? For the newcomers here, I started the Rich Room to create a safe space for me to like find myself and truly discover what fills my life up with joy. I also recognized that despite my many years of education, there's still a bunch of knowledge needed that I need to be a productive member of society that I have not yet acquired. And don't you know, knowledge is the quickest way to enrich your life. But I'm not teaching anything today, although I will have an episode fully dedicated to finances. As much as my anxiety wants to avoid it, I will be doing it. But today, I'm going to be telling you about the shitty day that I had this week. I believe it was either Monday. No, it was definitely a Monday. Of course it was a Monday. It was Monday. My shitty Monday Murphy Law morning. I woke up feeling weird. And when I first wake up, I do look at my phone. And it is unfortunate that that is a conditioned response now, because it almost rarely is a good thing to look at your phone or on social media or the news first thing in the morning. Because, quite frankly, we're in the midst of a bit of a shitstorm. And just daily, on the daily, we are reading all these fucking horrific stories. And it just doesn't make you feel good. It makes you feel like a little hopeless. It makes you feel a little sad. So I started my day that way, which wasn't the best. I saw a specific article and I was just like, I can't do this anymore. It's like, I just want to go back to bed. I cannot do this anymore. So I continued my morning by taking my dog Sadie on a walk. Nothing crazy, nothing eventful there, or so I thought, because when I got back into my house, I started to smell a very distinct, pungent, unpleasant smell. And I looked down at my feet and noticed that I had unfortunately stepped in a huge pile of dog shit when I was walking my dog Sadie. And I was like, what the fuck? What the fuck? What the fuck, universe? Okay, all right, we're not gonna let this shake us. Not gonna let this shake us. I'm feeling anxious. I got dog shit on my shoe, but I'm not gonna let this shake us. So on Mondays, I teach Pilates. I teach at 9 a.m., at 10 a.m., and 11 a.m. So I get up, I clean the dog shit off my shoe, I go outside, hose my shoe off, and then I'm sitting at my dining room table planning my Pilates classes, and I'm still feeling anxious, I'm still not feeling good, and I can't place it, I can't put my finger on it, but I can definitely sense a feeling inside my body of anxiety, a little bit of dread, and a little bit of sadness. But I knew that I had to get through my classes. And let me just tell you something. If there's one thing about me, I fucking follow through. Even if I'm having a breakdown, even if I'm having a bad day, I'm gonna show up. So I knew I had to teach Pilates. And I was stressing about the class, and I'm planning it meticulously, writing it down in my little notebook, planning all the moves, all the variations, what to do in case I have a pregnant person in the class, because there's some certain restrictions for pregnant people. And although I myself have had a child, it was 20 years ago, and I didn't know shit about pregnancy. And I still really don't. I still actually feel like pregnancy is total, and like birth recovery are still totally a area that I have little to no knowledge in, because I didn't really experience it myself. I didn't really have the normal birth experience. Not complaining, because the human life stage has been fucking awesome. And I love Madison and we have the best time together. So I'm okay not having the knowledge of the birth and the pregnancy, but it does spark a little anxiety whenever I have pregnant clients, because I just want to tend to them. I just want to make them feel comfortable. I just want them to feel taken care of. I think it was a good thing, because in my first Pilates class, I had two pregnant women. In the first class that I've ever taught by myself, I had two pregnant women in my class, which is unusual. And I almost had a panic attack, but I had someone, another teacher there who had a private class scheduled, and she kind of like sat me down, metaphorically slapped me in the face, not actually, but metaphorically. And she was like, "You are the boss. You are the boss." So that was very helpful. So I pack up my purse, I get my water bottle filled, and I drive to the studio. I'm driving to the studio and I'm listening to some of my favorite songs, trying to get into the right headspace for the class. And I arrive a little early, and I, you know, thankfully there's a fucking parking spot for me right out front. And I'm like, thank you, universe. Thank you, God. I appreciate the parking spot. I pull into the parking spot, put that bitch in park, close my eyes and start breathing, because I'm like fully feeling anxiety now. And I'm like, fuck, I got to plan. I got to do this class. I need to get in my head in the game. I got to get my mind right. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to study the class that I just prepared so that I can, you know, effectively give the best class possible. And I go to reach for my book and I realize that the book is on my dining room table and that I left my book at home. And I do not have the Pilates class or any written material with me to take into my Pilates class to teach the fucking class. There was a period of about 30 seconds where I started panicking. In those 30 seconds, I started to say, okay, I'm going to go home and I'm going to get my book and bring it back to the studio. So I like pull out of my parking spot and then I stop and I'm like, fuck, I don't think I have time. And so then I reversed my car. There was a fucking woman waiting for the bus right there. I bet she thought I was insane, just like going in and out of a parking spot because my indecisive ass, I was like glitching in my car, going forward and backwards into the parking space because I couldn't decide if I was going to go home and get my Pilates book. So I decided I did not have enough time and I pull back into the parking spot. I'm like, fuck, 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 fuck. What can I do? So then I pull out my phone and I'm like, okay, just write down everything that you remember about the class. So I started writing down everything that I remembered and my anxiety started to ease a little bit because I remembered basically everything. I was able to put the class together on my phone and then I was able to teach the two classes. And I got some compliments. Also got through my private. And I came home and I was like really relieved that I had done that, but I was not feeling great. And I still felt like I had so much to do that day. I had so many things like on my to-do list. I really needed to go to the grocery store. And I was just in my head. I was deep in thought. I was trying to configure the schedule in my head, how I could get things done, and also like try and sort myself out a little bit. And my daughter was trying to talk to me and I could feel something coming on. I could feel just a wave, basically, a wave of emotions, but sad emotions coming. And I told her, I was like, listen, I don't want to be rude, but I am feeling overstimulated. I'm feeling something coming on and I don't want to freak out. So if you could just leave me be for a few hours, I would really appreciate it. She was like, say less. Got it, and totally didn't talk to me. Then I started crying, not in front of her, but I just started crying because I could feel that I was sad. I was sad really that I felt like I wasn't in a position or the position that I wanted to be in. Like, I thought I would have been farther in my business at this point than I am. And it's taking a lot longer for me to get my business off the ground than I originally thought. And of course, it makes sense now that I'm in the thick of it because this is fucking hard. Starting a business is fucking hard. Harder than I realized it was going to be. I'm not saying that I'm not capable or that I can't do it because I'm doing it and I'm on my way. I'm not giving up now, but it is hard. I don't want to say it's the most challenging thing I've ever done because I've done some challenging shit in my life, but it's quite challenging. I think the biggest thing is the internal, emotional, mental barriers that I have on myself that I wasn't even really aware of. So now I'm finding those and addressing those. And I'm sure everyone stresses about the same thing. I was stressed about money. I was stressed that I haven't gotten more accomplished in where I am right now. I'm stressed because I feel like I'm not adequately providing for my daughter. And even though all of these thoughts are going through my head and they're quite magnified because I'm in a sad emotional state, but it wasn't like completely unfounded. And it was just those negative self-talk, those you should be doing this, you should be doing this, you should be farther along. Like telling myself that I'm on a timeline. But the reality of life is that we are all on different timelines. And I was very grateful because I was really feeling sad and I reached out to my mom, which is something that is very challenging for me to do. It's challenging for me to reach out for help. But no one gets through this life by themselves. We all need each other. We all need to work together. That is the whole point of this fucking life, is for us to work together, to make our lives better, to make each other happier. So I reached out to my mom and we had a great conversation. She really made me feel a lot better and reassured me by telling me that when I left law, when I left my relationship, when I left my old life in New Orleans, I started over. I started completely over. And not only did I start over, I actually addressed and went searching for all of the things in my life, in my brain, on my heart, on my soul that were bad for me. Or I started analyzing my behavior and why I was doing things and trying to get to the root of the problems. So not only was I starting my life over, I was going backwards through the first portion of my life and finding where I went wrong or what I could have done differently, or understanding myself and understanding the reason I felt the way I felt. So I was actually doing all this work on myself and then at the same time trying to figure out what I'm going to do with the rest of my life and how I'm going to be a productive member of society and how I'm going to be a role model for my daughter and for other women. And I am still kind of figuring that out. I'm still working on getting my feet off the ground. And that's fucking okay. It's okay that I have not made it already. It's okay that I am still in the middle of my success journey. And if I'm being completely honest, I already am successful. I measure success by being proud of yourself, happy what you're doing, and the way you're doing it. I sleep very good at night because I feel like I have very good intentions and I think of other people and I try to honor other people while also honoring myself. I try to honor other people's wishes and desires and wants while also honoring myself, my own desires, my own boundaries. It has been a delicate dance, but I have really started to find my way. And I am fucking the happiest I've ever been in my entire life. And yesterday, or on Monday, when I was having this sad day, I was focusing on everything that I haven't done instead of focusing on everything that I have done. It's quite funny because if I actually did like a comparison of lists, the lists of things that I have done greatly outweighs the things that I haven't done. So that's where I'm choosing to focus my energy, on what I have done and not what I haven't done. Truly, though, the universe or God or the higher power, whatever is out there, has always looked out for me. The first time I really, really recall, I mean, obviously there was probably other times, but I remember one time that truly felt like divine intervention, like true universe aligning shit. And that happened in, God, what was the fucking date? That happened in 2015, 2016, one of those years. I think it may have been 2015. So in 2015, I had just taken the Louisiana bar exam. I had just graduated from law school, Loyola Law in New Orleans. Shout out to my wolf pack. You know what? While I'm doing a little shout out, let me shout out to my Mississippi Gulf Coast people, okay? I know y'all are listening. I love that y'all are listening. And I'm so proud to have you all as listeners. And I just thank everybody for being so supportive of the show. So in 2015, graduated law school, took the Louisiana bar exam, I got my first law job. And while at my first law job, I knew, so Madison had been going to elementary school in Gulfport, Mississippi up until this point. And it was now, I had graduated law school, I'd gotten a job, I had taken, and spoiler alert, passed the Louisiana bar exam. And now it was the time for my daughter to move in with me. And in order for her to move to New Orleans, she has to get into a school. And as any parent will tell you now, getting into a school is, one, so important, which school you get into, depending on, you know, the needs of the child, and two, incredibly competitive, incredibly competitive. And the third thing, let's not forget, fucking expensive. Private schools are fucking expensive. Charter schools can be expensive. Just having a child is expensive because even going to school, they're going to have needs. They need money. They need money for their supplies and shit. So it was very important and very stressful and a lot of pressure to find and get Madison into a school. And that was something that I had absolutely zero fucking experience in. And I was doing it by myself. I will say I did have an excellent resource in New Orleans, and that was my friend Elisa. Shout out to Elisa in Chicago. Girl, I will be coming to see you in about a month. So my friend Elisa helped me and provided me with some like pamphlets and written documents, you know, outlining the school process in New Orleans. So I wanted to get Madison into this one charter school. But, I mean, it was basically the number one school in New Orleans. I think it was actually the number one school in the state of Louisiana. So I really wanted to get Madison into this school. And she had to take a test in order to be admitted into the school. And the test score had a bearing on the application process and on the admittance of the student. So Madison goes to take her test, and it was so fucking funny. Okay, not taking the test. Taking the test wasn't funny. But what was funny was at this time, Madison was obsessed with these knee-high, faux leather, high-heeled boots that she fell in love with at Walmart. I mean, she begged to have those boots. And we caved, Gigi and I caved, and got her the damn boots. Well, she wore these bitches everywhere, including the day of testing. So there's like, I would say at least 100 kids at this school, and they're all taking the same test. And so Madison, so it's all looking kind of like school, but then you see like little 11, 12-year-old Madison clunking down the hall in these high-heeled, knee-high faux leather boots. I mean, just fucking serving it, like not caring. And she's going into a test. And so it actually was a very important test, but I was extremely hyper aware that my like behavior or attitude or, you know, my energy could negatively affect her, stress her out, and she could do badly on the test. So I was very much like not trying to let my anxiety spill over onto her. I think I did a pretty good job. She took the test, and you know what? I'm going to say it was those damn boots, because wouldn't you know, we got her test scores in, and that girl got a perfect score on that test. So I thought, oh, hands fucking down. We got this. We are in. She's going to the school. Of course, she got a perfect test. She got a perfect score. So then I call up to the school and they were like, no, there were a lot of perfect scores. This does not mean she gets admitted into the school. I was like, fuck. And at the very same time, I was like, okay, well, we have to have a backup. We have to have a backup. So Madison refused to go to a Catholic high school. She did not want to go. Madison is Jewish. And at that time, she was in the middle of her Sunday schools, her Jewish education, her Hebrew school. And she was adamant that she did not want to go to a school that she would have to go to church. I understood that and I respected that. So I'd say back then, the only school that we considered was a non-denominational private school, but it was just so happened to be like the most expensive school as well. Peyton and Eli Manning went there, if that gives you any indication. So we applied, got into that school, got into the fucking expensive school. She didn't even need to take a test for that school. We got admitted, had to pay like the application fee or something like that. And when that was happening, we got a letter that from the other school, from the charter school, that they were going to do a lottery to determine which children got admitted into school. And I'm like, oh my goodness. So I actually attended several of these lotteries because this wasn't the only school that we applied to. I applied to several other charter schools, and each school has a lottery. So basically, each class is only going to have a certain amount of available spots. And so during the application process, the only fair way to determine who gets the spots is to do a lottery where they literally put children's names in a bucket and then they draw them out one by one until they fill the seats, the whatever seats are available. Then after that, they continue to draw the names to determine the wait list. So the wait list is basically just an order of kids who were drawn. And if a spot becomes available, the next person on the wait list gets called. So I've been to three other school lotteries, and Madison did not get into any of them. And obviously she got on the wait list, but she was not high on the wait list for any of them. And then but they weren't our number one choice. And then we go to the lottery for our number one choice. I say we, it was just me. And I was like, holy shit, come on, let's go, let's go, let's go. And I'm just like breathing. I'm like, whatever's supposed to happen is going to happen. I get there and there are several other parents there. There is the school administrator there with the names, with the bucket. And they tell us, they tell us that there are 5 available spots for 6th grade. 5 available spots for 6th grade, for the entire 6th grade class. And they had something like 200 applicants or some shit like that. And I'm like, oh my God, like shit. And they have 5 spots. And then in my head, I'm like, oh, but she got a perfect score, so maybe she'll get it. And they were like, uh-uh. There were 5 spots. There were 9 perfect scores. 9 kids got perfect scores. Madison was one of them. So in order to determine which 5 students get into the school, they put those 9 students in the bowl. And I'll mention that this school took the test score into consideration, whereas the other schools didn't even either have a test or did not take the test score into consideration. But this school did. So they put the 9 names of the kids in the bowl. They draw the first name. It's not her. They draw the second name. Still not her. Third and fourth name come up. She still hasn't been drawn. And I'm thinking to myself, holy shit. Oh my God. And I'm writing it down as they're saying it because I don't even know what to do with myself. So I'm just writing shit down. And then the fifth name gets drawn. And wouldn't you fucking know it? It's Madison Sobel. So Madison gets drawn. And she is the 5th student to be accepted into our first choice school. I didn't know what to do with myself. I actually didn't do anything with myself. I did not show any celebration. I did not even show any indication that my child had gotten into the school. Mainly because there was other people there, and there are only 5 people who just got in, and the rest of the people didn't get in. So one mom and one child in particular were there, and they were both sobbing. They were crying. And I was like, this would be really rude for me to be like, fuck yeah, we got in. So I didn't do that. But I do remember texting my friend Elisa, and I was like, girl, she got in. She got into the school. And my friend, I remember she said, she just responded and she said, look at God. And I was just like, you know what? Look at God. Look at this. This is divine intervention. And Madison getting accepted into the school changed the trajectory of her life for the better. If she had not gotten into that school, I don't know where she would be right now. Her being accepted into that school allowed her to do theater, allowed her to get an amazing education, allowed her to express herself. I mean, it was an art school. I'm very grateful for that experience, and I totally think that that is the universe working in my favor. I mean, another thing that I could mention is Madison getting accepted into the University of Miami. That was the only school that we applied to. The only school that we applied to. Now, we applied to it in an early decision. So we applied to it before all of the other schools had their deadlines. And Madison's approach was, if I get into this school through early decision, I'm going to go. But if I don't get into the school, then I'm just going to apply to other colleges. Well, she applied. And that bitch got in. She got in. She got a great score on her ACT. Like, I'm so thankful. I'm so grateful. And Madison getting accepted into the University of Miami changed the trajectory of her life and of my life. Like, we are both in Miami now. That feels like divine intervention. So I need to keep in my mind that the universe always has my fucking back. And even though I feel like I'm in more of a struggle period and I'm not really reaping any rewards from my work yet, I know it's gonna come. I know the universe is here for me. I know it. I just fucking know it. I wouldn't be in this position. I wouldn't have these abilities that I have. I know it. I know something amazing is coming down the line. I mean, amazing things are happening to me every single day. Okay, let's talk about the Met Gala. So the Met Gala occurs every year on the first Monday of May. This year, the dress code, Tailored for You, was inspired by the Costume Institute's accompanying exhibition, Superfine, Tailoring Black Style, which explores the history of Black dandyism. So for those who do not know, dandyism is a cultural and aesthetic movement that started in 18th and 19th century Europe, particularly in England and France. It centers around exquisite fashion and personal style, elegance, wit, and refinement, and self-preservation as a form of art and resistance. A dandy isn't just well-dressed, but embodies an identity through dress, manners, and intellect. Historically, dandyism was often a rebellion against rigid class norms or a way for men, especially in the middle class, to distinguish themselves with taste rather than wealth or title. Black dandyism takes that tradition and reclaims it, infusing it with Black history, resistance, and identity. It often shows up as Black men and women using fashion as resistance against racist stereotypes and using elegance as defiance. I loved the theme this year. I loved the looks this year. I really enjoyed the mix of history and fashion. And the fact that this is the theme was so poetically ironic for this year, even though it was determined years ago. It was needed for this year. I very much enjoyed the red carpet. Me and Madison sat down on Monday. Actually, it was the shitty Monday that I had. And we watched the Met Gala. Like, not only did I have a breakdown on Monday, but even after my breakdown, I still went to the grocery store and I still watched the Met Gala. So I didn't let that shit ruin my day. And I'm very proud of myself because that has not usually been my experience in the past. Usually I can cry myself into a horrible fit and it drains my energy and it takes so long for me to recover. So going a different way with my emotions really was the best for me. Okay, back to the Met Gala. That was the first time that I saw Anna Wintour without her glasses on. I was very shocked to see that she did the red carpet without her glasses. And honestly, maybe this was the year to actually do the red carpet in your glasses because of the theme. My top five looks were Kerry Washington, Pharrell, Coco Jones, Sabrina Carpenter, and Doechii. Okay, there actually were so many good looks. And it was really hard to pick my top five. And if I went back and looked again at all of the looks, I probably would be like, oh my gosh, but this person, but this person, but this person. I will say that these people are who left a lasting impression on me. Okay, first up, Kerry Washington. The designer was Jonathan Simkai. Kerry Washington was dressed in a custom ensemble featuring a structured blazer with an open back and a sheer crinoline skirt. I don't know what crinoline means. I think it's probably the type of fabric. She complemented the look with a wide-brimmed hat by Minada Millinery, hand-dyed to match her outfit. So I enjoyed this look by Kerry Washington. It was very much felt like a nod to Scandal. She was a gladiator in a suit, and she was definitely wearing the white hat. I absolutely loved this look, and I love Kerry Washington so much. Okay, the second look that I enjoyed was Pharrell Williams. So Pharrell was in Louis Vuitton, but designed by him himself. Pharrell, as I understand it, is the creative director at Louis Vuitton right now, and he was also the co-chair of the event. Pharrell wore a Louis Vuitton suit adorned with 15,000 pearls, a creation that took 400 hours to complete. He described the look as pinstripe pearls, blending classic tailoring along with opulent detailing. Pharrell's jacket on the red carpet looked like it was silver, but it really was tiny, tiny, tiny pearls. And once you got a closer look at it, the detailing was just impeccable. Pharrell is just killing it in the fashion game right now. I mean, he is killing it at Louis Vuitton. As you'll see, most of the people on my best dress list were Louis Vuitton, but not Coco Jones, who was my third favorite look. These are in no particular order, I must say. Coco's outfit was designed by Manish Malhotra. Apologies for any mispronunciation. This was Coco's Met Gala debut, and she wore a cream tuxedo dress paired with beaded pants. The ensemble weighed 60 pounds and was a nod to the theme's emphasis on tailoring and black style. I loved this look. I fucking loved it because the tuxedo dress that she was wearing cascaded out and had it was like a long train. It was so beautiful. And then I loved the styling. I loved the long ponytail. She looked amazing. Next up, we have Sabrina Carpenter, who was also wearing Louis Vuitton under Pharrell Williams' direction. Sabrina hit the red carpet in a burgundy tuxedo-inspired bodysuit with a dramatic train and no pants, embracing a playful twist on menswear. I like that Sabrina Carpenter wasn't wearing pants. I also really like that she wasn't wearing tights. I thought it was an amazing look. I thought she looked amazing. I thought she stayed true to herself while also really honoring the theme of the night. And last but certainly not least, Doechii. Doechii made a bold statement in her first Met Gala in a custom Louis Vuitton ensemble featuring a monogrammed jacket, damier azur shorts, I don't know what that is, I'll be fucking honest, and a burgundy bow tie. Her look paid homage to Afro-Caribbean fencing master Julius Subice, and also included my favorite part was a cheek prosthetic resembling the branded LV logo. I loved that she had the Louis Vuitton logo on her face. Very cool. It looked like it was like raised skin. I mean, obviously it was a prosthetic, but I've never seen anyone do that before. Doechii is having the best year. Her album is incredible. She killed it at the Met Gala. I mean, she is just killing it in all realms. That is on my fucking bucket list to go see Doechii. Gotta see Doechii. I was kind of hoping that she would be touring with Kendrick Lamar and SZA, who I'm going to see, me and Madison are going to see in Chicago in a month, but she's not. So I'll just have to catch Doechii on a different tour. I had a realization this week that it was quite funny, not funny, but I've come a long way. So I started this podcast in August of 2023. And that's the first, it was either August or September. And that was the first time that I put out an episode. But I had been working on the podcast for a year before that. And I have a distinct memory of me sitting in my Airbnb, 2 years ago, sitting in my Airbnb, trying to record the podcast, talking about the Met Gala, and I just start crying because I don't feel like I'm qualified enough to talk about fashion and that I don't know enough and that people would think that I am really ill-informed and don't know what I'm talking about and shouldn't be talking about fashion. And that was a super limiting belief for me. Like I remember just trying to do a podcast episode and crying because I was like, you don't know enough about fashion. You can't talk about it. And that's just so stupid. Yes, I can. I have eyes. I can see. So I can talk about it. And so even me just talking about the Met Gala right now and commenting about people's outfits and the designers and unapologetically saying the names of different designers and pieces of things that I don't know how to pronounce, but I'm just fucking going for it and I'll figure it out. That is a big deal for me. It's a big step for me because I used to be so afraid of doing the wrong thing, saying the wrong thing, mispronouncing something. Someone's going to be mad at me. No, that's not the case. No one's going to be mad at me. And you know what? I'm learning. I'm trying to do my best. It's okay that I don't say things the right way, because if someone tells me that I am doing it the wrong way, I'll say thank you for letting me know and I will correct it. I think that insecurity about fashion came from, I mean, just like general insecurity. But I do remember there was this one time that someone said something about my lack of knowledge of fashion, and I was so embarrassed. And I think that that like played into my self-limiting belief that I can't talk about fashion. So I went to a Lady Gaga concert in, 2010 maybe? That sounds about right. Okay, so I went to a concert, a Lady Gaga concert in 2010. It was the Monster Ball, and boy, was it life-changing in many ways. So my mom had gotten me and my sister tickets to go see Lady Gaga. And not only did we get tickets, we got meet and greet tickets. So we got to meet Lady Gaga, which you think that that would have been the only major thing that happened to me that day. But another major thing that happened to me that day was I met my friend Rebecca. We were instantly drawn to each other. Like, she also had meet and greet tickets. And so there was like a little meet and greet mixer right before. And we, so, you know, you walk in and I don't know how, but like we instantly like saw each other. I liked her outfit. She liked my outfit. And we like basically just both went up to each other and we're like, hey, I like your outfit. She's like, hey, I like your outfit. And it's like, should we be best friends? And it's like, yeah, I think we should be best friends. So we have been great friends ever since. We actually ended up going to law school together, ended up being in the same section at law school, and quite frankly, we've had a beautiful, blossoming, very supportive, loving, funny relationship. And I love that bitch so much. Shout out to my friend Rebecca. I love you so much. One of the friends that were with Rebecca, there was two guys with her. And they were nice. I thought that, you know, they were nice to me and everything. But we were all waiting in line. And I don't remember what they were talking about. But they talked about something. Oh, I remember. So he said something about Karl Lagerfeld. And I was like, I was like, oh, who's that? He was the creative director at Chanel at the time. And I was like, oh, who's that? And one of the guys looked at either Rebecca or the other guy and he was like, I bet this girl thinks that Coco is still running Chanel. And I'm like, isn't she? So he obviously, I did not know who Karl Lagerfeld was at the time. I do now. But when he said that, I was like cowered, like a little, like if I was a dog, my ears would have gone down. And I'm like, oh, okay. I'm sorry. I don't know who Karl Lagerfeld is. So even though it was like such an insignificant moment, it was pretty significant for me and it stayed with me in my life. So I was really proud of myself for even right now, even this episode, just talking about the fucking Met Gala, because there was a time not that long ago that I was allowing my perceived lack of knowledge on this topic to prevent me from even talking about it, even though it was something I really enjoyed doing and loved. So good for fucking me. Okie dokie, artichokey. So, I want to move into a little bit of politics, just a little bit. So if you don't want to listen, you don't have to. You can drop off. This will be the end of the episode. I've been toying with when to talk about politics because I want to serve my audience, but I also want to be true to myself. And I would be totally ignoring the state of the world if I did not talk about politics now. So I'm just going to go ahead and tell you some of the things that are annoying me with politics right now, or just life in general right now. So first thing, I'm really annoyed that Trump keeps blaming Biden for everything. Like, Trump regularly reframes his own failures as Biden's faults. For example, he blames Biden for inflation, but ignores that COVID relief bills, federal policy, and the supply chain disruptors began under his leadership in the 2016 administration. Because Trump dismantled key elements of the U.S. asylum system, separated families at the border, and created long-term legal chaos. And now he claims that the crisis began with Biden. But that completely ignores how much groundwork Trump actually laid for the mess. And I was very surprised when I started researching this issue to find out that the Trump administration presided over the largest flows of migration at the U.S.-Mexico border since the mid-2000s. Because the jump in migration occurred in Trump's final months as president and continued accelerating during Joe Biden's first 2 months in office. So what happened at that time? So Trump actually lost the election in 2020. Lost the election in 2020. And instead of continuing, you know, being the president of the United States, he went on a like tour talking about how the presidency was stolen, thereby igniting the January 6th riots. Not going to go there right now, even though I really want to, but let's stay on message. So at that time, the United States experienced the largest flow of migration at the Mexico border since the 2000s. That happened under Trump's administration. That happened before Biden took office. Go look it up. Go Google it. So I am so sick and I am so annoyed with Trump blaming Biden for fucking everything. And Trump's appeal, it's emotional. It's not factual. He relies on people taking on the sentiment that Biden was bad and I am better. But if you look, it doesn't hold up under scrutiny. But it definitely plays well to a base that wants a scapegoat and not a history lesson. To make it even worse, right-wing media reinforces this narrative, often without correcting it. And once the talking points circulate on all the networks that Biden caused X, it's repeated until it feels true by everyone, regardless of the actual timeline. So I invite people to go look this up. Go look it up, and you will find that what I'm saying is true. I'm not saying Biden was great, but let's stop saying things that are clearly wrong, and clearly you can look them up. I'm convinced that if Trump flatlined tomorrow, the nurses would be reporting that his last breath that he uttered was, "Tell the world Biden did it." I gotta be careful making too many jokes about Trump. Apparently, when you cross the border, there's a chance that you get asked about what you do for a living and whether or not you make any jokes or comments about Trump. Just ask Nikki Glaser. Okay, so the second thing I'm annoyed with. Talked about it before. I'm gonna talk about it again. Kilmer Garcia, the Maryland man who was, without due process, wrongfully detained and deported to an El Salvador prison. Trump says he's a gang member. Garcia says he's not. There's a real easy way to settle this. In court. If Garcia is a gang member, then prove it in court. It's as simple as that. But the Justice Department or Trump or who's ever running this shit have not done that yet. Trump has already labeled Kilmer Garcia as a gang member without any due process. And despite no court ruling or formal conviction, Trump has called Garcia a savage and demanded his deportation, ignoring the presumption of innocence and bypassing the justice system entirely. And it's seeming that this is just political theater, not justice. Trump is using Garcia's arrest as a campaign prop to push his anti-immigration agenda, regardless of whether there's actual evidence. This is fear-mongering, not facts. Because facts you prove in court, and accusations are not convictions. If Garcia is guilty of anything, the courts, not politicians, should be determining that. And until then, Trump's labeling is just dangerous propaganda that could lead to civil rights violations. I mean, it already fucking has. Like, if someone is guilty, prove it in court. Trump is acting like he's Judge Judy and ICE all in one, and that is just not how the justice system works. Trump's essentially saying he looks guilty, and that's just not how our legal system works. This is what authoritarianism looks like. Painting someone as a criminal before due process is how authoritarian leaders justify locking up whoever they want. And that's not law and order. It's dictatorship. If we allow the government to do this to someone who's legally has the right to due process, then there's nothing stopping them from coming after you. And the thing about due process, it is memorialized in the United States Constitution. And it says every person is entitled to due process. It does not say citizen. It says person is entitled to due process. This has been affirmed by our Supreme Court over and over and over again throughout the years. Just being, physically being in this country grants you due process under the law. If you want something different, change the fucking Constitution. Because right now, what's happening is blatant constitutional violations, which in turn is having extreme human rights violations. Just ask the woman in Oklahoma whose house was raided by ICE. This annoys me. She and her three daughters were shocked when early on a Thursday morning, it was still dark outside, 20 men with guns busted in their newly rented home. The woman and her three daughters were forced into the streets in their pajamas in the rain. There was a search warrant produced, but the names on the warrant did not match the names of the residents of the house. The agents tore through the house, turned it upside down, took all the cell phones, laptops, and cash. And they were wrong. They made a mistake. So now I have a new fear unlocked. Now I have to be worried about people mistakenly busting up into my house. I feel very bad for this family and the trauma that they had to go through. And these kinds of mistakes should not be happening. But it was probably Biden's fault too. You want to know what annoys me the most? Watching people who claim to live by Christian values turn a blind eye to everything they say they stand for, as long as the politician in question gives them what they want. So Christianity teaches love, humility, forgiveness, truth, mercy, and peace. Not ego, not vengeance, not golden statues and grievance politics. And yet somehow, Trump has become the poster boy for quote-unquote God's chosen leader. I'm not judging Christianity. I think Christianity is wonderful. I think it brings a lot of people a lot of peace and a lot of comfort. I'm calling out the contradiction. You can't preach about love and forgiveness on Sunday and then cheer for cruelty on Monday. If it's really about values, then those values should apply to everyone, even the guy you voted for. This isn't about being perfect. It's about being consistent. Because if you're defending everything you used to say was wrong, maybe it was never about faith. It was about power. And these politicians are supposed to be upstanding members of society. They're supposed to be role models for young people. And I think we have allowed, and I think Donald Trump is kind of the catalyst since his first run for president. I think we have allowed and normalized and we're desensitized to the totally disrespectful behavior amongst our politicians. I saw someone say the other day, a politician, I think out of Illinois, that they want to send, that, you know, they're talking about open up Alcatraz, and that they tweeted, Dr. Fauci should be the first person to go to Alcatraz. Why are we treating each other like this? Why are we talking about each other like this? This does not feel Christian. This does not feel like Jesus. I do not think Jesus would be approving of any of this because Christian values don't stop at the border. And even though y'all, even if we go with the argument that, you know, people who are in the country undocumented need to be deported. Okay, let's go down that line of thinking for a minute. That's fair and fine, but we're not making sure that we're getting the correct people. We're not making sure that we're taking care of these people. We're not treating these people like humans. There are people dying in these ICE detention centers. People are dying. We should care about that. We should fucking care about that. Okay, I don't usually like to end the episode on purely a political note because the political climate right now is quite nasty. So I'm going to leave you with a little life lesson that I've learned. Everything is temporary. Feelings, thoughts, emotions, they're all temporary. It all passes through. We're temporary. Our lives are temporary. Presidencies are temporary. Everything's temporary. So if you're feeling sad about where you are, if you're feeling sad about the state of the world, just try and get to the next day because everything could change in one day. And if you just make it through to the next day, that is doing enough. So just remember that everything is temporary. So we shouldn't hold on to it. We shouldn't give things so much weight. We shouldn't give our thoughts so much weight because they're temporary. Okay. Thank you everyone for listening to episode 6 of The Rich Room season 2. What? Yes, we are getting it. We are moving through this shit. I'm very impressed with myself for making it through another fucking podcast episode. I'm doing it. Things are happening. We're getting shit done. Follow me on Instagram at The Rich Room Podcast and also follow my personal account at Love with Lindsay. I hope you all have a wonderful day and a fantastic weekend. See you later, alligator. Bye.